Welcome everyone to the Crit Raid Podcast for Wednesday, April 3rd. This is episode 86. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo. Today I'm joined by Justin Chow.
I'm here.
I'm also joined by Liz Caetano.
What's up?
No Alex this week. We'll see you next week. I think we had a great show with him.
Yeah.
Last time.
He was very happy to be back also.
Yeah.
He was pretty good. Whatever. I mean.
He's all right.
Yeah, he's, no, he's cool.
I think he had a lot to say.
We miss him.
Yeah. It's been a while.
He definitely was like waiting to get on. He's like, all right, let me share all my thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me talk to you about Final Fantasy.
Yeah. We will ensure that we can get him on in a semi-regular basis.
Yeah.
Because I think the audio quality was good. And we certainly had plenty to talk about. So this, you know. It was the crew.
Yeah,
I think that we will make this work. We will make this work.
Yeah,
for you, Alex, we will make this work. Guys, it's a new week. Still playing Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
God help us all.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad we had the conversation post podcast because I don't think everybody wants to hear the same thing every week.
Yeah,
probably not.
About us talking about the side quests of Final Fantasy
and all the games that we were looking forward to playing, like Unicorn Overlord.
Yeah.
Have you guys played anything else since then?
No, I'm committed because I don't want there to be spoilers,
mm-hmm.
and because I don't want to play Baldur's Gate until we're done. Because I feel like you're not going to want to play Baldur's Gate until we're done. So
yes, you're
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I do really appreciate that. I appreciate you guys accommodating for me.
So even though every time I look at my PlayStation, I'm like, I'd kind of rather be playing Baldur's Gate right now. I play Final Fantasy anyway. Yeah.
I see you online and I feel the same thing. And I feel that energy exuding from that.
Just grinding
username.
Through.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing that has pushed me away from Final Fantasy for like a second. So, okay, I'm going to give you a weird connection of things. So Stellar Blade comes out in about 2 weeks. And the demo dropped for it last week, basically right after the podcast.
Yeah.
And I was very interested in playing it because it's one of those demos where like your progress carries over. And I was like, okay, nice. This is going to be great. But every time I go to play it, I have this like nagging feeling where I'm like, but this is half an hour that I could just dig into Final Fantasy and be closer to the end, you know?
Yeah.
So I haven't played it yet.
Trying to get to the end.
I haven't played it yet, but I did take a weird deviation, this weird left turn, right? So the company that makes Stellar Blade, they're called Shift Up, right? And they're mostly known for these like gacha style mobile games. And I saw what's his name? The guy from Washington Post. Gene Park. So I saw Gene Park post about their previous most popular game,
yeah,
and saying that it's actually like really high quality and
you should try it.
Well, he jokingly said, because it's very much one of those like weird anime gacha games, right? But he was like, low-key, this game's actually really good, and he's like, strangely, I think it might canonically fit into Stellar Blade's world.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, that's bizarre. And when I saw the gameplay, I was like, okay, this seems egregious.
Yeah.
But I was like, but the comparison that he gave to it is, he's like, it's basically Time Crisis. He's like, that's how this game plays, where it's like ducking in and out of cover, rail shooter type stuff. And I was like, that just sounds like kind of fun. So I was like, all right, I'm gonna take a step on the wild side, and I'm gonna try this weird mobile anime game. So I downloaded it, and my God, is it just like, I'm starting to get an idea of the persona of person that plays these games.
Yeah.
And it's not a great picture, to be honest.
Describe them in great detail.
So, okay.
Without
let me lay
offensive.
Out the plot. So the... All right, let me figure out the actual name of this game.
Okay.
So the game is called...
Thank you. That's driving me crazy.
The game is called Nikkei Glory something or other. Something of Victory... Glory to a Victory or something.
Nikkei?
Nikkei. Nikkei. So.
Nike?
Right? I was like, that's Nike.
Nike.
The 2Ks.
The God of Victory.
Nike, Goddess of Victory. That's what it's called. So.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me lay the context for this game. So in this game, you are awoken by a very chesty anime girl.
I thought you were going to say woke.
No.
You're this woke guy and you have this, you know, societal justice mission.
Okay, wherever your head was going, steer it in the complete opposite direction.
Yeah, and then you went chesty anime girl.
So you are awoken by this very chesty anime girl.
Not woke.
Where you find out that this person is calling you their commander, and you're like, you're what now?
Yeah, naturally.
And this person then, or this woman then, instructs you to help guide her to the end of this area. And through a number of weird, subtle context clues, you discover that this woman is not a woman, but a robot. And she is a robot war machine that is like, they are beholden to your safety. And no matter what, they will put their life on the line to make sure that the commander doesn't get hurt. And they do this by engaging in this rail shooter type gameplay where I'm trying to put this as nicely as I can. You control this and other robot anime chesty girls that are hiding behind cover, and then they go out and they shoot these robots that are blocking your path. But
their clothes fall off.
But as they're peeking out of cover.
Okay.
And the camera is positioned behind them. So
looking up their skirts.
Basically, the entire game is that, and they are shooting these creatures.
Do you still have this game on your phone?
They are pretty busty.
Show me that. Let me see that. I'll be the judge of this.
I can't.
So that's the home screen of the game.
Those characters are from ReZero.
I don't know what that means.
It's an anime. The blue and the pink haired girl.
Oh, okay. Characters. So maybe there's a crossover thing. Yeah. So the game is So that's the whole set dressing, but low-key, the actual gameplay, this is like, I feel like everyone's excuse when Stellar Blade comes out, the actual gameplay is pretty deep and kind of cool,
can I say, I have been looking up some stuff about Stellar Blade, and like, I'm looking at the gameplay, and I feel like it should be faster than what it is. It feels like very like mushy from what I've been seeing, and I thought it would be like more of like a, like all the things that we saw on the trailers felt like more of like a Devil May Cry kind of like action RPG kind of game, right?
Yeah,
but like it doesn't feel that way.
I've heard people describe it as a cross between that's exactly it.
Girls butts.
It's just butts and guns.
Hey, yeah. I mean, if you're crouching, what are you gonna do?
Listen, it's not
wear
like
clothes,
you're doing anything.
Pants, yeah.
You're not looking at anything wrong, guys. That's a robot. That's not a girl. That's right. A robot.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
oh my god, it's just butts.
So I've heard it compared to like basically a crossover between like Dark Souls and Bayonetta. Like that's what I'm assuming that this game looks like. But or at least that's how people are describing the demo.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious. I'm definitely looking forward to playing it. But as far as getting context for what this developer has done in the past, very interesting. Also, I don't know if you see those pictures going around where they're like, oh my gosh, this guy must be such a degenerate making these weird booby anime girl games. So the funny part is he's the programmer, but the artist is actually his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know.
I mean,
that's what's going on with this.
You could be into anime girls as both a guy and a girl.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess so.
Male, female. Doesn't matter. It's 2024. Sure. It's whatever,
guys,
you know.
Sex is blind, you know?
Right. Sex is blind.
Yeah, I think I'm past that point in my life where I'm gonna
play.
I would like to consume booby anime girls. I feel like we should be past that as a
you don't consume
as a
them
population.
You might choke.
As a species.
No, I feel like with the rise of anime, it's just gonna get worse. Like, and I feel like the more Gen Z / like the new generations who are like getting into anime, which is becoming like a higher and higher percentage of like all of them.
Yeah.
It's only just going to make the market more wide and, you know, insatiable for that kind of content. And then, because they're younger and because they're young, I assume like feeling and seeing these things make them feel a specific way. And
one would hope. it would progress.
People would spend dollars on new outfits. There's always a beach scene, a beach episode, or a beach outfit in every anime game.
There totally is, right?
Yeah.
And like in all animes, there's always a beach episode.
I was thinking about...
Yeah, but bathing suits, I mean, are just bathing suits. That's not...
But that's not what those episodes are about.
No, it's not what they're about.
It's about nosebleeds and the characters in different outfits that aren't the school outfits that they're usually in.
Yeah, I'm not a huge... Like, even... This is anime culture. Even playing Final Fantasy VII, like, as I'm playing it, there is a bit of me that's like, this game is very Japanese and
it's embracing that quirky weird humor. And like
culturally,
heavily.
I'm seeing some differences. I feel like of where like the average American consumer or like media that's produced for America is versus a classic Japan one.
Yeah.
It's just these very stereotypic archetypes of like. You know, Aerith is like the soft girl and they have they're so sweet and they have those like hand motions where they like put their little palms.
Yeah. And when they run, their elbows are like jamming into their sides. That's just how they run. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm trying to look past it, but I'm just like looking at this stuff and I'm like,
but that's where Tifa comes in and you're like, she's
feels like so old. Like this feels really like 2005.
Just the way.
Well, it's more like 1997, but yeah
right. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. I feel like the tropes nowadays in video games and anime is definitely going more on the progressive route, right? Like there's a lot more like stronger female leads and it's not necessarily like Aerith. Like, and so I get what you're saying.
I love that we're talking about this right after talking about Stellar Blade.
I know, but like, but we know butts and boobs will sell and like anime aesthetics are hot, I guess. So like that's going to be super popular for a very long time. Not more popular in the coming years.
I think the beach scene in particular is just such an egregious thing. Like, cause when you said that and when it like,
there's a beach episode in Persona 5.
Well, I was going to say in Persona 5, I remember it. I remember it in Tales of Arise. It's like
everywhere. Why, it's always.
Why?
It's just a funny anime trope. There's always got to be at least one episode in an anime where there's a beach episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Oh, no,
I
know
why. So they could sell figures of them in the bathing suits.
Yeah. This is also why, like, Persona 5 or even Persona 4 has outfits where they're in bikinis and stuff.
Yep. Makes no sense. Okay. Let's get...
progresses at some point in their lives.
No.
There will always be those
what sells
people.
Will sell, I guess.
It seems like it's getting more extreme. Because, like, this game, like, I've never played a game that's, like, this... egregiously like
but there's plenty of animes that are that bad.
Do you think because it's like
I don't know, I don't watch enough anime to have a frame of reference.
Do you think it's because like I don't know, like I mean the gaming industry is so wide, so many people like games. I mean of course it's just gonna mesh between like the blurry lines of like softcore, you know, porn and stuff.
Maybe I'm like not fully informed on this. I'd almost be sure that I'm not. But I'm pretty sure it's like a byproduct of like the social, like sexual repression that goes on in Japan. So it's
like those clubs or whatever, those bars that have like secret sex rooms.
Yeah. So it's like, but no, I'm saying like socially, it's like there.
That's what I mean. Like it's the same thing. It's like it's repressed on the surface.
Yeah, so
we don't do any of this. So we go into a basement into the extremes where you have all these weird,
on the outskirts. Yeah. So like anime is like the step that's like it's like public enough, but it's like, you know, maybe we're just watching porn. Who knows?
Yeah, I think there is something
that's fun
cultural to it. Probably.
All I know is when we were in Japan, it was not hard to find that stuff real fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you say we get into some news?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I have. I have four stories. One I think is a really great discussion. The others are, I think, fairly quick ones.
All right, so let's do the quick ones first.
We'll start with Dragon's Dogma, which has surpassed 2.5 million units sold.
Cool. All right. Wow.
That's a certifiable success. Good for them.
Certified banger.
Yes. Pretty awesome. I mean, I am still definitely not playing this game anytime soon. I looked at my like bar again, and I'm like, nope, it's just not. it's not going to happen. Sorry, guys.
Time.
Yeah, it's...
But maybe over the summer.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out where most of these games are getting cataloged. But from here, I think I'm going to be playing Unicorn Overlord and Stellar Blade in tandem. So we'll see. All right. Next news story. So this is in reference to Discord. So it's gaming adjacent. But did you see that they will be rolling out ads, sponsored ads, next week?
Discord?
Yeah. So I think they're trying to usher more people into buying their like Nitro service or what have you.
Oh, those kind of ads. I thought I was going to be like hit with ads in between messages between me and my friends.
So Discord is planning a rollout of its new sponsored ads, it's claimed. The platform revealed plans last month to launch sponsored quests, which allows users to earn in-game items by completing quests with friends while friends watch on Discord. What the heck? New rollout within this week, after which the paid promotions will become a permanent part of the platform, appearing in the bottom left-hand side of users' screens. To earn rewards, they must stream themselves completing in-game tasks while the advertiser, from the advertiser, while at least one friend is watching. Weird.
Wait,
what?
Somebody has.
I'm gonna read this again. A new Wall Street Journal report claims the program will roll out within the week, after which the paid promotions will become a permanent part of the platform, appearing in the bottom left-hand, the bottom left of user screens. To earn rewards, users must stream themselves completing in-game tasks from the advertiser while at least one of their friends is watching.
So when you're streaming in on your... You think on your video or on your, like, I'm trying to picture where on the screen this is going to be. Like, is this on the recording of yourself? Is it on stream that you're doing of the game? There's going to be, like, a little ad at the bottom that says sponsored by, you know, Yahoo or whatever, something. And then you, then Yahoo has these activities that are, like, you know... Get 10 headshots in 5 minutes and...
Yeah, I guess it's something that they're trying to... I don't know. They're trying to, like, gamify showing people ads rather than just, like, making them, like, obtrusive. Yeah, it's a weird thing, but seems very, like, antithetical to their model. Because for
antithetical.
Yeah, because the longest time they were like, oh, like... You know, there are no ads thing, and then Nitro was just like, we get more features, and that's what makes it cool. But I'd imagine when you start courting advertisers in any capacity, it's probably because you're hurting financially.
Right.
So.
I mean, how does Discord really make money?
Yeah, that's a big question.
It's basically just Nitro.
I assume, right? And they give away free usernames or users and servers. And it's like you just make as many as you want. Like,
yeah. Traditionally, Discord has relied on Nitro subscription services for revenue, which offers users perks like the ability to upload large files and can subscribe between $2.99 and $9.99 a month.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. You get special emojis and you join servers that are like everybody pays points to so that the server has like special abilities or special like capabilities or some stuff. Yeah.
And in January, they laid off 17% of their workforce.
Yeah.
So they're probably in a position now where they're like, okay, we're certainly not making enough money. And they basically just need to evolve their model because they probably capped out on whatever Nitro's doing.
Yeah, I guess the difference, like all the other voice services back in the day before Discord destroyed them all, is that all of them were like paid by month in order to have a server up at all.
Yeah.
Like TeamSpeak and Ventrilo.
Ventrilo, yeah. I remember that. What a different time.
I know, right? But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would ever buy Nitro. I feel like it's just a messaging service.
Yeah, it's funny. Like
I'm not really on the servers. I mean, at the point where we are like getting like a crit rate Discord up and running, like I guess at that point it would probably start making sense to start figuring out like what we'd want. But I haven't even looked at the offerings, if I was to be honest with you. Like, what does Nitro actually get you besides file transfer, which we've already circumvented with Send Anyway?
Well, I think
this podcast is sponsored by Send Anywhere.
Send Anywhere is a great application. I don't really know. Any money that's transacted on Discord is either Nitro, which I think is just for uploading big files, and it's also to give you like animated emojis that you can drop on people's things.
Yeah,
my brother's cool. Definitely on that,
dude. Too much chill.
Yeah,
interesting.
So yeah, so just an evolution in a very cornerstone application that we see in the world.
I mean,
of
it
games.
Works out for them because we need Discord.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, next story. So this one's sort of a small like nothing burger, but it is what it is. So Nobuo Uematsu, famed Final Fantasy composer, He basically said officially that he is going to be making the theme for the third game in the Final Fantasy VII trilogy, which is cool because he has also stated that he basically, he's like, I don't have it in me to do game soundtracks anymore. Like, he just can't. He's
The past two games has been done by these two other guys that is just redoing his songs, right?
Yeah. And like, as far as other
scores, they're amazing.
Stuff, Yoko Shimomura, I think, did most of 16 as well. Mm. And she's amazing. She did Kingdom Hearts, you know? Yeah, so just cool to see that like his legacy is going to remain with like a game that he basically created the foundation of in some way.
It's funny, I was listening to Final Fantasy VI music.
Yeah.
And I can see like the jump off point from 6 to 7, which it felt, I don't know, it just felt very like similar.
Yeah. 9 is still the most ridiculous soundtrack of all time. Like you look at 9 just on volume, there's more music in 9 than basically any other game in the franchise. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And actually if you go back and like read some interviews with him, he often says that that was his favorite soundtrack to compose because it required him to like travel to different places in the world and then like feel what those places were like in order for him to like figure out what places should sound like.
It definitely did feel different from 7 and I didn't really listen to 8 or play 8 rather.
It's funny because like the most different songs are the ones that people remember the most. So like in 9 it's like you have like Trano's theme, like the which is like the big piano dun, right? And then everyone remembers like Ala de Flamenco, which is like a total whiplash in the other opposite direction. That's like the it's the flamenco song. It's
can't remember it.
It's like Spanish guitars.
Oh,
it's for like the Festival of the Hunt pretty much.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's great. There's a lot of good music in 9.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones.
But that's nice. So he is coming back on for a final hurrah kind of thing. Is he like done after this, do you think?
He's
just going to be in a consulting role?
Well,
yeah, I mean, it's not like he's coming out of
retirement.
Kind of. Yeah. A little bit.
I'm sure he's doing well with his concert tours.
Yeah.
And he also has a couple of personal projects that he works on. He actually has a band called the Earthbound Papas. Which is pretty good. I have one of their vinyls. It's nice.
It does sound kind of Final Fantasy-esque, actually.
It's got something in there.
Yeah.
You know? All right. This is the last story, and I think by far the most interesting one.
I have one thing to mention that I came across that I thought was kind of interesting, but it's kind of like an old thing. If this is super interesting, then should we talk about
Hit it, yeah.
It's like Blizzard updating their terms of service or whatever, saying that when you buy a game, you're no longer really buying the game, you're just buying the key, and they have every right to take the key away from you if you get banned and with no refunds. And so then I started looking into this. Apparently like Ubisoft also enacted something like this a little while ago. Blizzard is now okay with taking your money and knowing that you're not actually buying anything. Like you're just buying
access,
a ticket,
temporary access.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're giving people more and more reason to buy games physically.
Right.
It's so funny how much of a resurgence there's been there. You know, what's also interesting. I have been feeling that feeling for movies recently. Do you get are you DVD people or anything like that?
Not really. I thought about it, but I have only a very few Blu-rays, and they're like particular movies that
I like. Is that why you have all these Blu-rays out?
So yeah, so I mean, some of those I've had for a very long time, but recently I got
Moana.
Two more. No, not Moana. The DVDs right there are Advent Children, the Fooly Cooly anime, the Cowboy Bebop full collection, E.T., Jim Carrey's The Mask. And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. These are all very special movies to me.
There's a wide range of,
it's kind of all over the place. But it was one of those things where so The Mask is a movie that I've watched endlessly. We've talked on the podcast about it before. And the other day I was like, where can I stream this thing? And the answer is nowhere.
Yeah.
Nowhere has it. You cannot stream it anywhere. And I was like, that sucks and is annoying. So it's either pirated, it's like doing F Movies thing, or but the idea of just not having access to that, because what if F Movies drops? You know what I mean? Just not having access to this movie that meant so much to me for such a long time. It's that sucks, you know? So
I mean, you could buy it digitally.
That DVD was $6. You know what I mean? Yeah. And now I never have to worry about having that problem ever, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I have bought DVDs recently. I think the last one was Everywhere, All the Time. Everywhere.
Yeah. Everything, Everywhere, All at
That's
Once.
That's the one. Yeah, there you go. That's the one. But very rarely do I buy DVDs, but I feel like the ones that I want to buy are the ones that I would care to go back to. So it's that Wedding Crashers. Scott Pilgrim.
Well, that's it. It's like, what movies do you rewatch, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to get, like, Oppenheimer on Blu-ray.
No.
It is a very good movie, but there's no way.
I did watch Oppenheimer. It was very good.
It's awesome,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I still have yet to watch that.
So much was happening all the time, though.
Yeah.
I was very like, I got to really focus on
this. Yeah, that's that, oh my God, what's the director's name?
Tenet.
Yes. Well, that's another movie he did.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We know who.
What's the director's name?
Christian Bale?
No.
You know I'm bad at this. Why would you? Alex isn't here anymore.
Yeah, Alex would be like, very
you would
upset
know
with all of
you
us.
You would know
because we know. We know,
we know his
it's
movies.
It's yeah, it's very famous. It's not like. Yeah.
Does he have anything to do with Batman movies?
Yes, he does. He did Dark Knight.
Oh,
is it David Tennant?
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
I knew it was
a Tenet is the movie.
Tenet is the movie, but you got me all confused. Yeah. Christopher Nolan, yeah. So it's like, yeah, fantastic movie, but I would not rewatch that movie, right? But right. I've seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back 100 times. It's a comfort food movie. I love that movie. Yeah. It's very easy. It takes so little for me to be like, yeah, I'll watch that movie, you know?
Grandma's Boy, that was definitely one of them.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's one of Jason's.
Yeah. So,
but if I want a movie, I buy it digitally, actually. I use like Amazon reward points or Google Play reward points.
There you go.
And but then I don't have it physically. They could take it away. I bought some of them on Google and then they like stopped that service.
Yeah.
And
did you see
like,
the Discovery?
I really hope they transfer my movies.
That's like the PlayStation Discovery thing. Like they like if you bought anything on Discovery Plus on PlayStation, they just straight up took it all away. Yeah. They're like, even if you spend money here, you don't have access to your stuff anymore.
That's
it's like,
yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
Right.
That's trash.
So I don't know.
Dude, licensing, what's happening now? Everything is now too convenient to the point where we're losing leverage over companies. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I don't know. So I'm having a moment with that right now. And it's funny listening to Blizzard take stuff away. You know what's funny? I actually have a physical copy of Overwatch. Yeah. Not that anyone's going to be playing because those servers are definitely down. But
yeah.
Yeah.
The Advent Children is an interesting take. I thought we were talking about this before. We thought Advent Children was like the last installment into Final Fantasy, but Dirge of Cerberus is actually the last one.
Yeah. Did Last Order come out after those two? Did you ever watch Last Order?
Last Order? Oh, the anime?
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was Zack, right?
Yeah, it was like one episode and it was so good.
It was really sick. Yeah. But yeah, I was looking at Final Fantasy Advent Children again just to watch it again.
It's
not even about watching it. I'm like looking at the character models and I'm like, the ones in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth are way better.
Yeah.
Way better.
Dude, you look at Barret in that. Yeah. I'm like, they missed.
Yeah.
They totally whiffed on that Barret design.
Dude, totally true.
You know what's funny? It's like, even rewatching that, it is painful to watch because it's like, at the time, you're like, whoa, they're jumping all crazy and stuff, but it's so slow.
Yeah.
It's such a slow movie. But the music is unbelievable. Like, the Tifa fight scene is peak.
The piano.
That is peak good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into this last topic.
Okay.
So this comes from an article from PC Gamer. Now, obviously we're not like primarily PC gamers, but I think there's some interestingness here. So if you'll indulge me, I'd like to read this article to you because I think it's it offers a lot of important context.
I'm ready.
So the title of the article is "The Gold Rush is Over. Slay the Spire and Darkest Dungeon devs say that big Game Pass and Epic exclusive deals have dried up for indie devs." So in an interview last week at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, the developers behind the indie sensation Slay the Spire and Darkest Dungeon said that the deal some small developers have come to rely on for funding in recent years, like Epic Game Store exclusives and Xbox Game Pass, are no longer what they once were. Quote, "I talked to at least five small teams of 35 members or less during GDC, and they're all saying cuts, cuts, cuts. Funding canceled. Talks that were going on for a year canceled." And said Casey Yano, co-founder of Slay the Spire studio Megacrit. Quote, It sounds like it's shit. We're definitely very privileged to be self-funded. Otherwise, I'd be very, very scared right now." Slay the Spire launched to slow sales on Steam early access before eventually becoming a deck building juggernaut. Darkest Dungeon was likewise a Steam early access success. Both games are available on PC Game Pass, though the Darkest Dungeon director Chris Bourassa said that Microsoft's deals are getting games. For getting games on Game Pass have come down in scope since the subscription service began. Way down, Yano added. Quote, wow. So has Epic, Barbossa said. The gold rush is over. I came from the Northwest Territories. The town I was in was built on gold, but they found diamonds further north. Maybe another paradigm shift is waiting us, but I definitely think that the scale of deals I'm hearing about are significantly diminished from the big swinging days. Certainly when we got our deal from Epic. So it keeps going from there, but you get the idea.
Yeah, interesting.
So I think it's pretty interesting. Part of what makes me think that this is going this way, and I'm curious like what your guys read on news like this is, my assumption is Epic Games Store probably offered big deals to get people onto their platform initially because they were a new player in the space and they wanted to get people in the door, so they were offering a lot of money to establish themselves. I think very much the same story for Game Pass.
Right.
But I think in both scenarios, probably less so for Epic because they are very flush, but I think in both scenarios, they're like, this is just an unsustainable model. It's Netflix, right?
Yeah.
You spend a ridiculous amount of money on the front end to get people like locked into your service. For Epic Games Store, they just needed to establish themselves as a viable marketplace. For Game Pass, though, it's like they need them to be a part of that ecosystem. And I think long-term, it's just not sustainable for them to offer the kinds of deals that were getting big profile games on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine the byproduct of this is pretty obvious, where it's like we're just not going to see these crazy games, or maybe the volume of games appear on, well, certainly not appear on Game Pass, but probably have less opportunity to get funding through, you know, these kind of like sponsored deals through Epic Games Store. What are your guys' thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's also potentially a product of the industry right now. I mean, everybody's cutting back costs and canceling projects and, you know, letting however percentage of their staff go, and they just don't have... I feel like we're on the cusp of something big and bad coming for the game industry. I feel like the whole industry is not a sustainable model.
Yeah. It's funny that we are in a situation now where we are just replete with games. Like, there's so many good games to be playing right now, but all around it, in the background, it's like basically every company is suffering, taking losses, cutting jobs, like... And it's because it works on cycles, right? It's like, this is where all of the work from COVID is paying off, you know? Because most of the games that we're playing now were probably started either being built in 2019, 2020.
Right, four or five years ago.
Yeah, now we get to see them. So what it feels like is 2-3 years from now, it's going to be a much darker place, you know?
Yeah. Backlog time. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. The more I think about it too, the more I'm like, the more I only think it's certain. Like, I feel like it's only at the very, very top. Like, the games that are ridiculously expensive to make and the risk that is involved with like making a game that costs like $200 million nowadays, like with the current marketplace for those games, I feel like you really need to hit it on the head to make sure that that game is going to sell. Otherwise, you're going to fold pretty fast just because of the costs involved with it are just so astronomically high. And I feel like because of those risks, it's just like more people are taking, or rather less companies are taking like serious risks, which is just going to mean like a terrible crop of games that are going to come out in the next couple of years. I do still have faith, though, on the lower end, on the indie side of things, people who are doing self-publishing and stuff, because, like, the industry is not getting smaller. Like, they're still projected to be making, like, or growing from, like, a $200 to a $300 billion company by, like, 2027. So, I mean, not company, industry. And then even greater in 2023. So, I mean, in 2030, sorry. But, like, I can't imagine that it's going to get to a point where, you know, like, I feel like gamers are still buying games. I feel like maybe they're being just more choosy with the game. So yeah, maybe they're not buying as many games. I think about it.
I don't know though. I don't quite understand where the layoffs are coming from, I guess.
From what
I would imagine the layoffs, and so much has been said in some of these like, you know, shareholder reports or what have you, where they basically, it was a wrong bet by basically every company. So, it, you know, America is a capitalist nation, right? So every business that exists sustains on growth. If the companies have to be growing in order for them to even exist, it's just the way that it works, right?
Yeah, so it's a little crazy.
So in COVID times, it's like, all right, well, we are getting crazy money from everywhere. More people are playing games than they ever have before. People are subscribing to Game Pass, buying consoles, buying games. You know, so there's all this additional money that's in the space that didn't exist before. So now, if you're the owner of a company, your immediate thought is, well, this is the new world that we live in. We just have these new customers. So now we need to scale appropriately to basically leverage the growth opportunity that's in front of us. So I think they scale up, they hire employees, they sign on new projects, they do all this sort of stuff. And then when the wave is over, when they realize that, you know, guess what? The entire world isn't going to stay inside for the rest of their lives. Yeah. You know, they're probably like, oh shit, this money really wasn't here. And we might've kept like a portion of the people that we gained during that time, but certainly not enough to sustain all of this growth that the company had and funding, you know, 10, $100 million projects. It's just not sustainable. So they were like, okay, cancel all these games, get rid of all these people. Like, let's get back to a place where we can be profitable, you know?
It's also, I mean, a lot of money went in during COVID, like you said, and then a lot of money got scared because of COVID was over and then people aren't staying inside. But there's also a huge economic downturn that we have to, like, you know, consider. And also on top of that, it's like the games that with inflation and the cost of games nowadays increasing like exponentially almost, and those games being so of high costs, like let's say Starfield or Halo or whatever, like doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to sell or they're going to do well at all. Mm-hmm. And so you like take that in consideration with the idea of games not pulling in, like they're still like, even with a $10 increase, it's still $70 at best, $60 and like less than or lower. Mm-hmm. And we're also realizing microtransactions only work on certain games. And we're also realizing that games as a service sucks, like all of them. So it's like, now we're realizing that the industry has been trying to figure out ways to extrapolate more money from people in order to substantiate the costs of games. And they're realizing that those numbers aren't mathing out anymore unless you're Rockstar, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So I just think there's a lot of, you know.
Yeah, so the only thing they can do is make the cost of games go down, and the best way to do that is to just fire a bunch of people.
Fire a bunch of people decrease the scope.
Yeah, it's take your overhead down.
I feel like games should start decreasing in scope.
Yeah, but Final Fantasy, Square Enix, cut out the open world stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the trend of making games bigger is not making them better, and you're wasting money on that.
This is Sean Layden's speech. This is Sean Layden's speech. I mean, he was like the prophet, you know? Games are too expensive and they take too long to make. Like, he literally said that.
Yeah. That being said, I mean, we're not developers, so I don't know how much time and money goes into that kind of stuff versus other stuff that you need to have a game.
So like
I feel like they add stuff like that because it's like they put all this time and money into the base, and then 10% of that can go into all this other stuff that makes it seem bigger and worth the cost.
So
we don't know what that ratio is.
So the latest cost of Call of Duty costs over $200 million to make and over $100 million to market. So over $300 million just to get that game out there and selling at some level.
Isn't it crazy that that's also the best-selling game? Like they're comfortable spending that much money.
Yeah, let me pull this up. Like real quick, this was actually fascinating when I was looking into it. But
the joke is that Microsoft needs to come up with that money now. annually.
Yeah, they need to.
And they give 30% of it to PlayStation.
They just need to keep
growing,
buying more stuff.
Genshin Impact between developing and marketing, $700 billion. But then given that's like an ongoing game, right?
$700 million.
Cyberpunk 2077 at the time, a total of 441, with inflation now, it's just shy of $500 million to make and sell that game. Let's say like Marvel's Spider-Man 2, 2023, $315 million. So, I mean, there's Final Fantasy VII in 1997, $40 million. Marketing, wow. Okay, so it was $45 million, $40 to $45 million to develop, and then about like $40 to $100 million to sell Final Fantasy VII in 1997.
Market.
So it was double the development budget as marketing? Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. They were pushing really hard in the Western in the States when that game came out.
That's just what the way is. You know, yeah. You just have to market.
$100 million on marketing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Last of Us Part Two, $220 million as of 2020. Yeah, as of 2020. And then if you go all the way back and you look at like when they originally started reporting like hikes in video game like costs, 2010, the average on high end for, and this is 2010, this is only like 15, 14 years ago, the high end for a game development was $28 million. $28 million in 2010.
Yeah, it's a different world.
Wow.
It's like a completely different world. That's this crazy. Scale is,
isn't it?
Getting ridiculous. Yeah.
Man. So, and games back then were like $60. Now they just went to $70, maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, even it's not even commensurate with inflation. Like that,
four times the cost,
right?
Like, yeah, I'm sure you've seen those pictures go around of Toys R Us magazines from like '96. Have you ever seen those where they were pricing games back then? So, like maybe. Final Fantasy VI mm-hmm. or Final Fantasy III, like this game, this was $90 when it came out.
Wow,
Jesus!
In what was it? 1995, 1996.
When did they all decide on the $60?
1994. $90. But that was what those games cost then. You know what I mean? It's because there was no established price scale.
Right.
Like any game could be priced at whatever they want. And then it was really only during the, because I think it was even like that during the PS2 era, but it was probably around then that the $60 game was established.
My PS2, I think I was still getting games as gifts. So yeah, I wasn't buying them.
I was thinking even earlier than that. My PS2, they were all.
I think N64 was the $50 price point, and then I think GameCube and further was $60.
Yeah,
and then it retained that, you know,
so long
through PS4,
right?
You know, and now here we are. That's so $10 over what, like?
Well, because
just search, like, if you go on an inflation calculator, just search what $60 was worth in 2006. And then search the same thing now, you know?
Yeah, well,
and it's probably insane.
Compensated.
Do you have that?
Wait, what is it? Say it one time.
Like, if you search, like, an inflation calculator.
Yeah.
And then just see how much $60 in 2006 is worth now. Today,
yeah. Okay. $60 in 1996.
In 2006.
2006.
So 15 years
ago. So that was like an Xbox 360
game.
93 bucks. $93.90.
So that's what we're talking about. So like when you were buying an Xbox 360 game for $60,
it was like $100.
That game that cost $20 million to make.
Yeah.
That value should have at least been the equivalent. So like if you even just do it on a value ratio,
for games now.
You should be paying $100 for a game that cost $20 million to make, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. the cost of $20 million,
well.
that would
have scaled up as well.
Well, but also,
it's just insane.
They've added,
like,
every game.
Bless you.
They've compensated in other ways, right? They have microtransactions and bundles and, you know, deluxe versions. And
yeah,
and it doesn't cost an extra $20 to make two skins and an extra, you know, and a digital art book, right?
Yeah. Did you get how much? Okay, so ten. So it would be. $20 million development cost would be $30 million today.
So that's still
ridiculous.
Order of magnitude lower than what it actually is now. Right, you know?
Crazy.
But
fraction.
What were you
cost.
Saying? There's something I wanted to mention after, like, on what you were
deluxe
talking
about. Editions.
Yeah. Did you
and
see the Final Fantasy VII like deluxe editions that you would be paying for $100 or $120, and what you would be getting for that?
Nothing.
It was a digital one.
It's like digital art books and like a soundtrack that I think you can only play on your PlayStation.
Yeah.
See, the
not
ridiculous.
There not was impressed. A there was a digital deluxe edition that did have like some stuff with it.
It had
the magic pot summon.
Yeah, it had an extra summon and then like two accessories or something like that.
Yeah,
no bathing suits.
The magic pot summon is pretty interesting. Do you guys have that one?
No, I don't know how to get it on. I didn't buy it. I wonder if you can get it on.
I think it was like Carbuncle in you just straight up can't get it.
Shit.
In game.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Unless you buy the digital edition,
it's not something I'm using actively. I'd say that.
Yeah, I just want to see it. I'll watch it on YouTube.
I mean, I feel like with that stuff, it'll be available later to purchase separately.
It is crazy though. Like you think about these numbers, and you're like, I understand why the industry is in disarray. Like it makes sense, especially after COVID being such like a skewer in the industry. Like to like really poke it into a specific direction and like get it moving in a specific, you know, way. And then you think about all these like the cost of development versus the cost of video games to consumers. It doesn't make sense. Although I will say that consumers have grown, or rather the market size has grown since then, but it still doesn't make up for the fact that...
It really doesn't. Yeah. If you have a game that doesn't perform
and still at
incredibly,
that,
then you're just doomed.
And then still at that amount of money, you still have crunch and delays and problems with development.
And you know what the worst part is? Yeah. And it's like
we should be past crunch.
I don't
know. As a society, as a world, as an industry, we should be past crunch.
I also I don't know if I'm going to be able to articulate this correctly, but it's like, as I look around my room and I see these like N64 games and stuff, like, you know, these games that I've collected over time, like, I still, like, there's this reverence for this stuff that existed, and it was so, like, there are only a certain amount of games on these consoles, right? Yeah. Like, the N64 had, like, whatever, like, 170 games or something. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it, right? So there's this there's this almost, like, finite nature to it where I look at games now and it's like, yeah, they're phenomenally more expensive. There's all this insane labor that's attached to it and all this stuff. But in my mind, they just feel so, like, disposable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're so, oh, there's a good word that I have. Whatever.
Disposal was a pretty good word.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good word.
But it's just like, these experiences just kind of run through you. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like this thing.
They don't carry
thing.
Any weight.
It's like Taco Bell.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like what? it's like Taco Bell. Taco Bell. Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to commoditize it and get you to buy and eat a lot of it. And then you're upset about it after the fact.
Yeah.
But you still are going back for some reason.
It was Baja Blast, baby.
Yeah.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
It's just an odd thing. So it's like, it's almost like the craftsmanship that was involved. It's almost like making a game felt like it was this special thing back then. Like it was not something that you could just do.
And when everything is special, no one will be.
And now, right?
That's
and
from on, the Incredibles.
I knew where that was from. I think about it. It like has permanent residency in
right.
Head.
I think about that.
I think about it all the time.
All the time.
But
how profound.
It was funny. Pixar, man. What was I about to say now? I'm just thinking about The Incredibles now. Sorry. We were talking about
games being disposable
and special. And
oh, there's going to be a great reset. There has to be, right? There's going to be a point where they either shrink the scope and get developers back in. I mean, like right now, I feel like, okay, I'm talking about a lot of things at the same time. Let me bring it back. I think that you're right. Video game development back in the day was special, but nowadays they have engines like the Unreal Engine where everyone, it opens up and breaks down barriers for entry pretty drastically. Now people can make pretty amazing games with just creativity on the canvas that is the Unreal Engine, right?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I feel like even with the boons and the efficiencies that we've gained in video game development, this is a great song, in the development of video games, like costs of games are still going up. Like they're still going up and they're like, I don't know what the word is. It's just like they're going up and they're becoming less special. Are they becoming less special?
Well, I guess the part that I'm not able to really like set into place and feel good about it is like, we're also different than who we were when we were playing games then. So it's like maybe just the way that we're processing games is just different.
Our standards that much different now.
Like I know that have to my neuroticity for playing a lot of stuff is a newer thing. Like I've played a lot of games back in the day, but like now it's almost like this ritualized thing. You know what I mean? So it's like maybe it's the problems with me. Like my brain is broken, so now these games just kind of run through me, and I don't think of them as these important things anymore.
Mm.
But I have to imagine that part of it is just the rapid, like, it's just, like, we're all sitting on, like, four different games that we want to be playing right now. And it's just like, you know, by the time we finish Final Fantasy VII, whenever that is, when we're 85 years old, you know, it's like, I'm going to play the next thing, and it's, I'm going to kind of like let that experience cast aside. It's like when we have Game of the Year discussions and we're like, what did I play this year? You know what I mean? It's like, that's a weird thing. Like why is that that way? Why is it that way?
Yeah. The cup half full viewpoint on that though, is that when we didn't have as many games, you just had to play everything. Even the things that sucked.
Yeah.
You know,
very true. Very true.
And like, so the quality of games that we were getting then is nowhere near the quality of games that we get now. Because now if a game doesn't, you know, doesn't hit that standard, people don't buy it.
Yeah.
And then what? Studios crash and burn.
There's just too many games. Like, yeah.
You know, I have no reason to play a game that I'm not going to enjoy when I could be playing, you know, a triple A banger. Like, even all the things we've said about Final Fantasy VII, yeah. Like, all the complaints we've had, like, it's still an incredible, like, you know, piece of art that we're all going to play. Yeah. Or, but why would I play something subpar, something that's a 6 out of 10? That's why there are no... You know,
did this somehow become a sales pitch for Crit Rate this entire time? Because I think it did.
Yeah, maybe.
pretty cool. I have a question. What is a bad game that you played that you like? I think of two right off the rip.
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Oh my god.
I mean, Death Stranding
from any generation.
I would say
I don't think that that's objectively a bad game.
I don't say it's objectively a bad game when I tell people I like it. Half the people are like, what?
Are like groaning, yeah. Like, the two that come to mind...
I don't think I can think of another, like, really bad game.
The two that come to mind... Actually, the three that come to mind immediately for me are on the N64, I played the Mission Impossible. Their port of Mission Impossible. Game. That game is bad. That is a bad game, but I love that game. On top of that, there was a PlayStation 2 and Xbox 360 game called Dark Watch, where you played as this weird vampire cowboy thing. That game kind of sucked, but I enjoyed that. And then there was also this Xbox 360 game that I played with Brandon called Bullet Witch. That game sucked.
Interesting.
But that was a fun game.
I can name a few. I could say Jedi Power Battles was a bad game, but
That's a good bad game.
That's a good bad game.
That's a good bad game. Yeah.
I think...
wow, that's a great one.
Quest 64 was one that I was really into.
Really?
That's a straight-up bad game.
That's a straight-up bad game.
It is a bad game. I had a lot of time in that game for a while. Still haven't beaten it. I have to keep thinking. I definitely have some on Game Boy, but I feel like that's unfair. Like,
yeah, Game Boy is basically 90% trash.
Yeah, right.
And like, Pokemon.
I am playing. I'm still poking around through Final Fantasy Legends, and I'm just like, this is a bad game. The systems are terrible.
Yeah. What's funny is when you play Game Boy games now, it's like you'll get that jank, but then there's also a certain part of, at least I've experienced this feeling where I'm like, this game is not moving fast enough. Like, my brain is moving faster than this game, so it's actively challenging for me to slow down and play this. You know? It's a weird thing.
Oh, I got another one. Dynasty Warriors. Most of the Dynasty Warriors games, but I'll go back to the first one on PlayStation.
You played the first one?
I had the first one.
That was like a fighting game, not like a Musou game?
No, it was a Musou game. It was one of the first games that came out for like the PlayStation. There's a fighting game?
I would almost bet money that Dynasty Warriors 1 is a fighting game, and Dynasty Warriors 2 is a Musou.
That might be right. You might be right, but I just remember slicing through a lot of people back in the day and being like, what is this? And
it might have been Dynasty Warriors 2. That was a launch title for PS2, I believe.
I think this was in... Oh, it might be PS2 then. Wow, I thought it was for the original play, because I am looking at this and it is a fighting game.
It's fascinating. Right? Yeah.
I did not know this existed.
Apparently it's very bad, but Lu Bu's in it, so you know it's good.
Yeah, you know it's good. Okay, it must have been Final Fantasy, PlayStation 2 then. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, it's funny, I learned a lot about Chinese history.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, it's great. Did you ever play Samurai Warriors?
Yeah.
That was less good.
Yeah, it was less good.
Yeah.
But Alex and I had also played that game. We were like obsessed with the Dynasty Warriors game for a while.
Well, that was such like fun, like brain off co-op.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
go here. There's a blinking dot on the map. Slice through a bunch of these enemies.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. What other bad good games are
there? Yeah, I can't really think of any.
You were an N64 girl. Come on. There's 90% of that library is bad.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I feel like all the games I played on the 64 were great.
You didn't play Buck Bumble or Iggy's Wrecking Balls?
Nope.
Or, oh man, All right, let's just look over at the shelf. What are bad games that are there?
I'm looking at that shelf, and I was like, I feel like...
Gemini, was that bad game?
No, Jet Force Gemini was good with terrible controls, but it was very good.
The controls were terrible.
They were really, really bad.
Hey, You Pikachu.
Hey, You Pikachu is a terrible
garbage.
Game.
And that also,
is,
that's is not hot a fun, garbage. That's not
I
a fun
say I, okay, that's a game. I loved Hey, You Pikachu.
Did you?
Absolutely loved
that
it.
That game just didn't work.
Yeah.
It's not even I that it was like a weird concept. It just didn't work.
The novelty of it, I was just like, how does this, how did they figure this out? Like, this
hey,
is like
Pikachu.
Magic.
Pick up the ball.
Like this is like a spaceship. Like, was, how did you program
it? It was like trying to talk to the Furby. Like, do you remember Furbies? Did you have one? I remember trying to talk to Furbies, and it was like that. It was like, it never understood what I was trying to say.
It just blabber talks back to you.
Yeah.
But like, see, I'm even thinking about it. I'm like, I wouldn't consider that a bad game. But now that I'm like really thinking about it critically, it's pretty bad.
It's
game.
A bad game.
It's a terrible game. It's
like, okay, you know,
Justin's right. It didn't work.
You know, it's a good bad game.
It had some problems.
Mega Man Legends. Mega Man Legends.
Oh, I loved Mega Man Legends. And you're right. It wasn't a good game.
That was a bad game, but it was also.
It was so
great.
It was so freaking good.
I mean,
it was so cool.
Like, The Last Guardian also did not work, but I also liked that game.
That is a totally fair choice.
Yeah. I've not played it.
I've still not played it. Frankly, I've heard too much bad about that game that I'm 100% scared off of it. And I like Studio Japan. Like,
I thought the controls actually worked totally fine. And I think all these people that complained just didn't love their Trico enough.
Yeah.
From what
I
understand,
I was very nice to my Trico. I pet him all the time. And we were good buddies. And he listened to me all the time.
You know,
it's
funny.
What these people are saying.
The fact that, like, all the things that I heard about the controls and how janky that was. And hearing that you love that. Also, I feel like there's some semblance or there's like a thread between that and Death Stranding. And you liking those two things, and they're both kind of like in this weird space where you're like, this is where Liz lives. In weird jank.
Weird jank.
Not a judgment. Not a judgment.
Yeah. The only game I could think of maybe is like, but see, I think it's a good game. There's like a couple Kingdom Hearts things that were like not the mainline games. Like I played Birth by Sleep, and I loved it.
Okay. I think that's actually good.
It got pretty good reviews, but
and the story's gonna be really good.
No,
the 358-2 Days. I know people really don't like that one,
that
and I know people also really don't like Chain of Memories.
That's
the card one, right?
Yeah, but I would not say people really don't like that. I would say
I don't like it.
Yeah, but I would say Kingdom Hearts fans and like how it reviewed that one actually did pretty.
Do you know what mystified me about that game? I just need to share a story. So, old school TZR fans will remember one of our friends, Ryan Sheehan, who was part of our Extra Life streams and stuff. He was a good buddy of mine. I just haven't talked to him in a long time. But I'll tell you what, if I hit him up, like, you know when I streamed Lords of Exile when I did? The first person in that stream was Ryan Sheehan.
Really?
Instantly. And he's like, there's no way you're streaming right now. I was like, I am streaming right now.
That's hilarious.
So he is like, I would say top three biggest Kingdom Hearts fans that I've ever interacted with. He's mega into Kingdom Hearts. And I knew it because he did like
I'm a little threatened by this right now.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, I didn't say he's number one, but I'm saying he's up there, right? And I remember when Chain of Memories came out, I was playing that for a bit. And you probably know this, but like, and maybe help me fill in the dots, but I'm pretty sure if you pre-ordered Kingdom Hearts 2 on PS2, you got a copy of Re-Chain of Memories, which was the GBA game, but it was a PS2 game. They basically took the entirety of the GBA game and made it into a 3D PS2 game. But you could only get it as a pre-order bonus for Kingdom Hearts 2 from like a certain retailer. And that I was like, maybe you could buy it afterwards. But I remember
there are like collections that come with Re-Chain of Memories now that you can play. And they do play differently than the original Game Boy game. They're like a 3D.
I remember he showed me
a
PS2 disc. Like he had the disc in the box. And I was like, this is sorcery. I was like, that's a GBA game. Like, why would any company care that much to remake this GBA game into a PS2 game and then give it away?
I remember I've talked about this recently with somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but like, it does blow my mind. Why would they redo all the assets and remake the game?
Because it's totally different. It does not like.
Well, and that's what he said. Because
different.
I dipped out of the GBA game pretty
this is
early.
The difference. It's like it goes from a 2D game to a 3D game.
Wow.
Yeah, like I dipped out of the GBA game pretty quickly, and then he was like, well, you should be playing the PS2 one. And I was like, the what? Like,
well, it's because it was, if you just hopped into place the Kingdom Hearts 2 without having any knowledge of Chain of Memories, it would be hella confusing. I'm assuming that's
I went into Chain of Memories with full knowledge of those games, and I was still confused. Yeah, that's like what Kingdom Hearts does. They take anything you think you know and then say, fuck everything. No logic is going into this.
It's a little odd to me that they would
Named Namine. Who the fuck is that?
It's a little odd to me that they would make it as a pre-order, because assuming if you care enough about Kingdom Hearts 2 that you're pre-ordering it, you've probably played Chain of Memories. Like, they should have just made it, and maybe they did, but it kind of makes sense to make it available for all the people that didn't play, because they went from a PlayStation game to a Game Boy, a Nintendo Game Boy game, and made that story pretty, basically an exact sequel, story-wise, to the first game, and then the third game is back on PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Like, it makes...
I think I followed. Anyway... Yeah, continue.
So you go from PlayStation 2,
yeah,
Nintendo GBA, back to PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
And the game of Kingdom Hearts 2 takes place like exactly after the events of Chain of Memories.
Damn.
Like, you go to Organization 13 and you're like, how come? And you go to like the journal and you're like, who are these other organization members? Like, what are you talking? I only have to kill 8 people in the organization because 4 of them are already dead, because you already killed 4 of them in Kingdom Hearts.
Oh. I've not watched or like paid attention to Chain of Memories at all, but I remember playing Kingdom Hearts 2, and I thought I was understanding the story.
They tried to make it so that they tried to make it so that it wasn't critical, but
it's the bridge.
Yeah, but you're definitely playing.
It's like not playing Intergrade before playing Rebirth.
No, I would say it's more critical than that.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't know.
You could just play Rebirth, and Yuffie could just show up exactly how she is, as opposed to like. But they don't explain.
But you wouldn't know the weird characters that are wearing normal clothes that she talks to.
Quick, pronounce that guy's name. Pronounce that guy's name.
I don't remember any. Names.
No idea.
The guy with the weird name. She says it at one point, and you.
Yeah, that's a straight up, like, it sounds like a Chinese name.
Jijia. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Jijia, yeah. That's so funny. That's the only one I remember because you're, yeah. Because
I looked at that and I'm like, never heard that before.
That's straight up like, Chinese, and with the Z-H-E, that's okay.
Yeah.
Why would they do that? Just give them like Bill. They already have a Bill. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not saying that they shouldn't. And
just anglicize this shit. Come on, man.
Yeah. Anglicized.
All right.
Yuffie. That's a name.
This was a fun discussion.
This is good.
We'll pull more of these little tidbits out.
You are making me worried about games in 3 years.
Right? Like,
I'm a little down now, though.
Yeah.
I feel like
the world's coming to an end.
I mean, I have a lot of games to play, so I mean, if the world is coming to an end, thank God I have.
Just embrace retro.
Give me some time.
It's the industry's fault.
There's a lot of old good games that are worth playing.
Dude, I still have Resident Evil 4. No, I uninstalled it because I needed it to update Baldur's Gate. Sorry.
Resident Evil 4 is excellent.
I know.
It was excellent.
I still have the disc. I will play it. There's
You know what the joke is?
What's the joke?
Do you want to know what the joke is, Liz?
What's the joke?
I could have played and beaten Jedi Survivor twice in the amount of time that I've played.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yep.
The time to platinum in that game is 40 hours solid, and that's like if you're going slow.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think I just cracked 85 hours in Final Fantasy.
You know, I like.
I don't understand.
I liked collecting all the things in that game. They're not necessary though. There is too much collecting, but
I must let the game on or something. I have like 105, if not more, at this point, hours in that game. I do take it slow.
I think early game of any game you take slow.
Yeah. Anyway, so good times.
Yeah. Let's put a pin in it. This has been real, everyone. Thank you for coming to this week's episode of the podcast. If you're subscribed on iTunes or Spotify or what have you, hit us with that follow. Hit us with that rating. Tell us that we're doing good. And leave us a little note. We've got this poll at the end where you can like write a note and talk to about this episode. If you have any questions for us or you want to leave us a sweet nothing, we'd appreciate it.
We definitely will read the feedback.
We absolutely will.
But
Alex will probably be back at the end of the month. I think we're doing first of the month.
Yeah.
First of the month. So
May.
Look forward to that. Slight change. In the meantime, check out CritRate.io. There's amazing games there. Great ratings. Wonderful photos of games that are coming out. Probably stuff that you could play, like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. But just be warned, whatever that rating is, it's still going to take you 100 hours to beat this game.
Over. All right.
For now, thank you, Liz. And thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
We'll see you all in the next one. Bye, everybody.